This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit MindfulTherapyGroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
All right, here we go on a Tuesday. It's Cody Ingold, Alex Gold with you. Drew Nixon producing the show. You can watch it as well on Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, wherever you social. Video stream will be up and running shortly as well. You guys can always interact with us on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. So coming up a little bit later on today, Nate Taylor from The Athletic, our Chiefs insider, going to join me in studio. A lot to get caught up on with Nate Taylor. What is he hearing on the roster front, I guess, for Sunday's game against the Chargers based off of what Andy said yesterday? DJ Humphreys, of course, is who I'm specifically talking about. Does he agree with me on Joshua Williams? That's some of the stuff we'll get into with Nate Taylor a little bit later on as well. Plus, coming up in a half hour, there's a chance we'll have our NFL insider, Vinny Pasquantino, join us. I believe he is out of town, though. We at one point said, hey, don't even worry about it, man. You're on vacation. At one point, he said, maybe I'll call in. So we'll see. We'll be pleasantly surprised if he calls in at 10:30 or so. I'll be honest, if I were him, man, I'm on vacation. Just say, hey, screw it. I'll talk to you guys next week.
Do you ever listen to the station at all when you're on vacation?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because if I'm in my car, and I'm driving, like, last Tuesday or whatever, when I was driving to get lunch, I popped on real quick.
Yeah.
So I listened to you guys for a little bit, yeah. Now, do I, like, sit there and listen to the whole show? Of course not.
No. Right.
But, yeah. Now, vacation's different if I'm in town or out of town. Like, if I was out of town, then no. Like, if I was on a beach in another country, no. But if I'm off for a couple days and I'm still in Kansas City and I'm driving around, like, I still listen to the radio. Like, some people will put on an app or whatever. Like, I still listen to the radio. And so one of those things would obviously be sports talk. Otherwise, I'll just listen to music. That's kind of my thing. Are you an app person in the car?
Yes. I think it's because I've got a newer car where, like, if you... It's not even newer. It's more like if you have a car that has, like, the CarPlay stuff. Like, if you have, like, a 2019 or if you're, like, a 2019 or later... You just have the CarPlay that's connected, and you don't even have to worry about the radio anymore because it just... I mean, you can do the radio, but the apps are always just right there for you. I feel like when you get a new car, Gold, you're going to become an app guy.
Got to go talk to my friends at Max Motors, man. Got to go make it happen. All right, let's talk about where things are at in the AFC, though, for a little bit. And then we will talk some baseball either way, I can promise you, in the next half hour or so, including a... unbelievable rule suggestion, which I had to make sure wasn't actually fake. We'll do that in a second. But the AFC updated picture, I mean, it's December. It's go time now for everybody in the AFC. You start taking a look at the seeding potential for number one. You start to get a feel for what everybody's got left, five games left, a couple teams still on a bye. For starters, the Baltimore Ravens were once unbeatable, right? That's what we were told. The unbeatable Ravens, like, hey, you can't stop Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson. I believe that's what some national folks were saying. They're suddenly 8-5, and they're a wild card team, and the Steelers just keep on winning, which is why I asked the question, does Pittsburgh deserve more attention as a threat to Kansas City than we have given them? Not for the number one seed, because I just think the math is really tough to get there to find how on earth the Steelers would pass both the Chiefs and Bills. I said a week or two ago, I think the number one seed conversation is over. It's the Chiefs or the Bills. And I still believe that. The odds market would tell you that's the case as well. Chiefs are -135, Bills +110. Steelers are 20-1 to be the number one seed. I'm not saying they're a threat for the one seed. I'm just saying, come playoff time, have you seen enough recently where you're like, okay, maybe I have to factor them in more? It really is whether or not you believe Russell Wilson can play at the level that he just got done playing against Cincinnati. And that's why my answer is still no. I don't believe that Russell Wilson, who's had a great season, who you could make a case along with Joe Burrow and a few other players, could be the comeback player of the year.
Yeah.
I don't know if in the playoffs, do I think Russell Wilson is putting together two consecutive games, which is what it probably would take to play the Kansas City Chiefs in the playoffs, depending on how the seeding works out. Right now, the Steelers, of course, are a divisional leader and would host a wild card round game. And then they would go on the road, potentially, if they were to win in round two, whether that's at Buffalo or at Kansas City, I guess, depending on how the seeding lays out. But I it's hard for me to consider them a threat for multiple wins. Now, if it's one, like for some reason, if there's no way this is going to work out because the Chiefs are going to be a division winner, and it looks like the Steelers are as well. So they probably wouldn't play the divisional round. But whoever you are, like if you're a wild card team and you have to go to Pittsburgh, that is going to be brutal. Hell, the Chiefs game in Pittsburgh for a one game sample on Christmas Day is going to be a brutal game for Kansas City to play. I just don't think I can tell you right now that they're a threat in terms of the AFC title game conversation unless you think they can win multiple games. And I still question whether they can do that. Am I just being still way too pessimistic about this Steelers team?
No, because I think if everybody, I think, is going to overreact to Sunday, because, again, a reminder of who they played the worst defense in the NFL this season, and everybody's basically looked good against the Cincinnati Bengals defense. So I think that you can take it for something in the fact that they've strung together, Russell Wilson strung together some good performances, and they've beaten the Ravens, and they've beaten the Bengals, and all this other stuff. They've been able to put up points, but I think when you look at like who they've played, and it causes you to hesitate a little bit just because you look at the remaining schedule, and you mentioned obviously the Chiefs are in there. They have the Browns at Philly, at Baltimore, the Chiefs, and then the Bengals again. The Philly-Baltimore game, as you and I were talking about before the show, Gold, is, and just in prep for this, was those are that might be the real test where if they can beat Baltimore and Philly, then all of a sudden, I don't, the one seed is whatever, but they're legit, I think, if they can beat Philly in particular. And they beat Baltimore again on the road, but I don't know if I'm drinking the Kool-Aid yet. And I don't think you're wrong for not drinking the Kool-Aid, because the way that they play, you just can they win two games? I think to your point, because who would they play if they won the division? They'd be the three seed right now. They'd play the Chargers or the Broncos, and then they would go on if they won that game, they'd play the two seed, so they'd play Buffalo. Do you think they can string a couple wins against the Chargers and Buffalo?
No, I don't. That's still where I'm skeptical about them being a threat. Now, someone on the text line says, hey, everybody's a threat to Kansas City with the way they're playing. Sure. With the way they're playing right now, every single game is going to be a nail-biter. The Chiefs aren't blowing anybody out. We brought that up yesterday, even though I also said yesterday 80% of all games in the NFL are decided by one score or less here in the 2024 season. The Steelers' thought process would change, I think, for people, as you said, with the schedule. They have Cleveland, then at Philly, at Baltimore, and Kansas City. If they won all three of those or two of three, then yeah. The regular season stuff to me is just different. The same way we discuss the Chiefs differently come playoff time, I think it's what Ross Tucker has told us, or our Odyssey NFL insider as well. I'm on the same page as him, which is we all can see them being a brutal out for anybody and winning a game. Can they win two? And if you are calling them a threat, to me, you have to think they can win multiple games. That's why the Chiefs are a threat in the playoffs. That's why the Bills are a threat in the playoffs. It's why it's hard to imagine anybody else, honestly, being in the AFC title game. Like, do I think right now the way Baltimore's playing, they can win two games in a row, and given their playoff history, as in Lamar's playoff history. But ultimately, right now, all that should matter for you as a Chiefs fan is the number one seed conversation. How do you hold off Buffalo? We know Kansas City's 11-1. The Bills are 10-2. The Bills have the tiebreaker. Kansas City has to finish with a better record than Buffalo. KC has the Chargers on Sunday night at home, then at Cleveland, home to Houston, at Pittsburgh, at Denver. There's a 3-game in 10-day stretch there, Cleveland, Houston, Pittsburgh. The Bills are on a bye this week. Then they have at the Rams, at the Lions, before finishing up with Patriots at home, Jets at home, and at New England. If the Chiefs are to get the number one seed, I think it's very fair to say the Bills have got to lose one of the games against the Rams or the Lions. If the Bills do not lose to the Rams or Lions, then I think they're going 15-2. And that means the Chiefs could not lose another game because, as I said, they don't have the tiebreaker. And do we think right now the Chiefs are finishing 16-1? I can't get there. I just can't. And so that's the challenge and why you desperately need the Bills to lose a game between the Rams or the Lions over the next 3 weeks.
Do we ever say that it was a lock, the one seed?
A lock?
Yeah.
No.
I guess it was all dependent on the Bills game as to whether or not it was a lock.
If they would have beat the Bills, then yes.
Okay.
Because again, it's the tiebreaker math is where it would have been. I mean, the Chiefs would have been 12-0 right now, and the Bills would be 9-3, and the math wouldn't work out for Buffalo. That's why it's so important, though, because I don't know about you guys. This is the question I guess I should be asking. Do you think the Chiefs are running the table? I sure as heck don't. Mm-hmm. And so if they don't, that means at best case, they're 15-2. And that's still like a hell of a regular season. Boy. And the Bills could run the table if they get through the Rams and the Lions and they have the tiebreaker. So that's why, to me, it's all about the next couple weeks. Desperately need to be rooting for the Lions and the Rams.
I was going to say, who do you think has the toughest schedule going forward between the Chiefs and the Bills? The Chiefs have the Chargers at Cleveland.
I think it's the Chiefs. They're all playoff teams except for Cleveland.
Denver.
I think it's the Chiefs. They're playing all playoff teams except for Cleveland.
Because
right?
I think, if I remember right, the Bills, not notoriously, but the Bills always struggle against New England for whatever reason. Like, that's like their kryptonite in a way where, for whatever reason, the Patriots always give them a good game, and they could drop one of those. They can't afford to do it. They play the Patriots twice. That might be one where you look back on it. Not to say that the Bills blow it, but let's say the Chiefs lose one of these games before they play New England, and the Bills got like, okay, the Bills have this have New England, the final game of the regular season. New England has nothing other than we can make sure the Bills don't get the one seed. The Bills might lose. If the Bills lose that game, it would be a surprise. They would blow it, but I don't know if it would be. You said the Chiefs have the toughest schedule, but in terms
of the
scariest matchup, maybe, or the one that could just, sleeper
playing,
team in a way, could be.
The Chiefs are playing an 8-win Chargers team on Sunday night. They're playing at Cleveland, who we've all just seen are just going to be a tough out. Nobody thinks they're a great team, but with Jameis, last night was the full Jameis Winston experience, where he threw for almost 500 yards, but also have two pick sixes and four touchdowns. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a tough game. That's not the one I'm really counting. Houston, division leader. Pittsburgh, division leader. And then at Denver, who is going to be a playoff team, it sure looks like. And that's on the road, and we all know how close the game was at Arrowhead. And then the challenge, and why you have to have that Rams-Lions loss coming for the Bills. If you don't, then it also ensures that, you know, you're in a position where that Denver game, you know, it's hard to imagine that one not being a game in which you have to play your starters right now, doesn't it? Because you can't, again, you cannot tie.
To get the one seed, yeah.
With the Bills.
Yeah.
Well, that to me is the ultimate goal right now until the playoffs start, is getting the number one seed, getting the bye. We'll play some audio later on today where Chris Jones was talking about how he wants to, you know, basically petition the NFLPA or whatever in the offseason to make it to where if you're going to have teams playing three games in 10 days around Christmas and stuff, that you guarantee them a mandatory late season bye week versus a week 6 bye, which is what the Chiefs got. You know, a lot of people are talking about, like, well, either way, the Chiefs would get a bye week, whether it's the wild card round or whether it's week 18 against Denver. I'm not so sure that's the truth, because unless Buffalo, unless Kansas City has dropped multiple games before the Denver game, then that week 18 game at Denver, I don't think is going to be one where you rest your starters. The only way the Chiefs are resting their starters, I think, at Denver is if they themselves have dropped games, because I find it hard to believe that the Bills would be eliminated from the number one seed conversation with the tiebreaker now before week 18. So the Chiefs, to me, unless they're going to lose to the Chargers and another team before, which is possible, then that game at Denver is one where the Chiefs, I think, are going to have to play their starters.
Yeah, I think the way that it's tracking definitely looks like that.
So hopefully the Bills just, you know, slip up. And the best chance for that is at L.A. and at Detroit. We'll get back to this a little bit later on throughout the show. We'll continue to take a look at some of your texts as well. 913-586-7965. As I said, we are video streaming. Multiple people on the text line have asked, where did I get the hoodie I am wearing? I've gotten way too many people, not too many people, but people asking about the hoodie today. It's a retro
nice hoodie.
Royals hoodie. I got it from Rally House, of course. 2 years ago, we were doing our remote at Rally House. It's very comfy. Yes, it is.
It looks like it.
Yeah, nice powder blue Royals hoodie. So, yes, that's for those that were asking, that's where you can get it. All right, let's talk baseball for a second, because I truly had to double check that this wasn't like just some fake suggestion that was out there from somebody trying to stir up the pot and conversation around baseball. I had to make sure it wasn't that. And no, there's a report from the New York Times that there is something called the golden at-bat rule that is being discussed. You're like, what the heck is the golden at-bat rule? This is something that, according to this report, Rob Manfred has been considering multiple changes, and the most extreme suggestion would be a golden at-bat rule. Jason Stark over at The Athletic as well put together this in more detail. Basically, at the core of the idea, it would allow a team one opportunity to call upon a hitter who's in the lineup but is not due for an upcoming at-bat. You would basically be able to pinch hit a hitter that's already in the game. Does that make sense? So let's use it with the Royals. This rule suggestion would allow you in a circumstance to say, you know what? The bottom of the order is up. Eighth hitter is up. We want to put our best hitter. We want Bobby Wood Jr. up. So we'll use our one golden at-bat. Bobby Wood Jr. gets to bat in the eighth spot. And then he gets to bat again in the two spot when we come back around. And that's the idea. So imagine in any spot at any game, or imagine a big moment, you could use it, you know, in the late inning situation. You could use it earlier in the game if you can, you know, bust the game wide open. I think this idea is horrendous. This seems like something you would put in a video game. Like, I'm playing a special game mode in MLB The Show, or it's something that we would just see that is thrown out in an all-star game, or you know, a celebrity all-star game or something. Try it there. This is awful. I've actually applauded Rob Manfred over the last 5 years with some of the changes to baseball. I actually think they've been really beneficial. Pace of play, of course, the pitch clock. People have been critical over his tenure, but I thought he's nailed that. This would be terrible. Now, the exact specifics and variations, nobody knows. It's just something that is gaining some traction. I have no idea if this would ever happen, and I sure hope it wouldn't in baseball. Would you have the golden at-bat rule only be for the seventh inning or later? Would you only have it for playoffs? Would you only have it for the regular season?
Not at all. It's awful.
I mean, think about, like, I mean, there's so many weird scenarios where you could have even your leadoff hitter. I keep using the Bobby Wood Jr. scenario. Like, the golden at-bat rule, Bobby's due up next, but you want to actually have him bat two times in a row. Like, what? Then who? Do you have a pinch runner?
That would be wild, actually.
So you're going to have Bobby bat back-to-back. He gets a double. Then he goes back to the batter's box. And what? Then you're allowed a pinch runner at the same time. Like, this all has to be worked out anyway. It seems like a mess. It seems like a crazy arcade video game thing that would be fun mode to play where you could just... This is fake baseball is what this is.
Someone said this screams Savannah Bananas.
There you go.
It absolutely does. This is Harlem Globetrotters-esque. Because to your point, Gold... Say they want to intentionally walk Bobby. Uh-huh. Okay, he gets on base. Hey, let's bring him back
again.
Are you going to intentionally walk him now?
Yeah.
And then they intentionally walk him. Like that might be the best example of the rule of how stupid the suggestion actually is. Is if you're going to intentionally walk a guy, you're going to intentionally walk him twice? Because why would we not do this? It makes a mockery of the sport, I think, where... You don't want to be in that situation. You know, baseball, to your point, Gold, has done a really nice job of trying to attract more viewers on a more consistent basis, just from a national perspective, from a regional perspective. And they've done a decent job of, I think, bringing in more eyes with the games being faster and everything like that. But it makes a mockery of what the sport is and it has always been. And I think that's the last thing that you actually want to do.
Yeah.
You don't want to make it a joke.
And it's pointed out in the article from Jason Stark as well, that this is something that, you know, it's been a fairly casual conversation at this point. As far as it actually ever becoming a thing, it's still probably a long shot. And I just don't know how anybody that would have to be part of the approval process, owners, and I don't know if the MLBPA has to also approve this or not, why on earth you would do this. Like, the thought process is, hey, more high leverage at bats for... You know, the top hitters in the game, that creates more drama.
That's not the way the game of baseball is. That's not the way the game is.
You're truly changing the sport. Like, adding the pitch clock to me is not changing the sport.
No.
It was trying to speed it up. Ultimately, it wasn't changing how the game is truly played for the most part, right? This is like just fundamentally changing. Like, all of a sudden, the NFL, let's say, like, what's the NFL equivalent? Like, you're just allowed one time a game, a fifth down. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I guess, like, you're allowed a fifth down, or one time a game, you only need to get 5 yards for a first down. Like, it'd be something stupid like that. Or one time a game, that field goal is worth 10 points if you want to kick a 70 yarder. Like, it'd be something stupid like that. I'm all for new ideas in the sport and how to make it more interesting. This is truly video game stuff. That's what the golden at-bat rule would be in baseball.
What they should have done was suggest it for the All-Star game. Like, hey, they're thinking of a new All-Star game rule, and then if it worked out well, it's like, you know what, maybe they could use this for the real game. For them to go all the way to... For them to go from 0 to 100
let's
on this
just go
idea.
Ahead and, let's just go ahead and have a game where you're allowed to sub in any all-time great from your franchise's history once a year. Just go ahead. They want to bring back George Brett for an at-bat. Go ahead. Like,
this is crazy stuff. We're going to clone prime Bo Jackson, and we're going to bring him in for a... We need somebody to go from first to home on a line drive single. We need Bo Jackson, please.
Yeah, there are so many other things I would add or change to baseball before I would ever, and someone, I think that text is a great way to compare it, other than the video game angle, which is you're basically just making it like a Savannah Bananas baseball game. And that's as great as that is. We all know what that is. Like, you're going to watch it for what it is. It's the Harlem Globetrotters of baseball.
Yeah.
An actual regulated regular season MLB game, or God forbid, a World Series game, having a golden at bat, is just not how the sport should be played.
It's a complete mockery to the sport.
Worry about the number of games that you have. Worry about whether or not you should have, you know, the ghost runner stuff or whatever in playoff baseball.
Worry about one team all this other stuff. Deferring all this damn money so they can
pay guys.
Salary
cap or a salary floor. You know, I still think ultimately, to your point there about the Dodgers and the money they're spending, there's part of me that wants the Dodgers to just go sign everybody. And my only thought with it is, does it get so ridiculous? Like, if they already signed Otani, if they signed Soto and then they signed, keep going,
they've already
right?
got Snell,
And they already signed Blake Snell. Just so ridiculous that finally people wake up even more in baseball and like, this is, like, it gets, I'm talking about like the most extreme of the extreme. Like, they just consistently keep signing everybody. I know we already think this happens, that the Dodgers and Yankees sign anybody they want, and there's some truth to that, certainly. But I'm saying, like, the ultimate extreme. Like, they get Soto, they get, then who pick next year? They get the biggest price. Like, just so absurd that maybe that would actually bring about change. Maybe I'm being naive, but that's the only way I think that ever changes. Worry about that kind of stuff before we come up with some silly, you know, golden at bat rule. And an MU fan just texted and said, what's wrong with five downs? There you go.
Well,
But it's just crazy. I did you be honest? Like, when I put that on the rundown, did you think it was a fake rule idea? Cause I had to triple check that this was something that was actually being discussed by the commissioner.
When you first read it, it's like, I thought, is this for an actual game or is this like an all-star game thing? Like how the NBA is changing their format and they've done so. Is this just something that baseball's trying to do? But no, it's real baseball games that matter for wins and losses. I don't know how people would view it going forward, but you're taking away from what the game actually is, and I think it completely destroys the reputation that baseball has in terms of, like, quote-unquote America's pastime. You made a mockery of all of that and what it became.
There is at least one person on the text line that says, you know what? Says from the 913, I like the idea. I'm tired of watching games come down to a terrible batter striking out again. Let the best of the best compete. It's just not how the sport is played. I'm with you. Would I rather see Aaron Judge at the plate in the bottom of the ninth, as far as just a casual observer, not if I'm the opposing team, a casual observer? Would I rather see Aaron Judge at bat? Yeah, there's some truth to that. Then pick whoever the number nine hitter was this year for the Yankees. I don't know who the heck that was. Whoever that is. Yeah, of course there's truth to that. It's just that's not how the sport is played. That's like saying let Patrick Mahomes be the quarterback for both teams. I mean, like, it's just that would be more exciting, but you're changing the entire sport.
To me, the only way that this idea actually has any sort of relevance to go into actually be playing in a game is if baseball decided for whatever reason to do like an NBA Cup style like in-season tournament. Fine, you know what? You want to do it for the MLB in-season tournament? Fine. But in terms of games that actually count for your record and for your playoff push, it's not good.
Yeah.
It's not good.
You want to do it for the All-Star game? I'm fine with it. Like, fine. Yeah. Do it during the All-Star game. The game doesn't count and that whole thing, right? And why not? That would be where I would be like, all right, you know what? That's fun. That's different. Fine. You can bring some other All-Star back off the bench. The reason why they would never do it in the All-Star game is an ego thing. Because could you imagine? You're an All-Star, so you're obviously one of the best players in the league that year.
And you're getting
And then the manager says, we don't want you to have the at-bat. We're going to give that at-bat to the All-Star that started the game. That's why they would never do it in the All-Star game. It'd be an ego thing.
Oh, yeah.
But that would be the only game in which I would be like, okay, well, why not? That would be it.
Someone said from the 913, you either evolve as a sport or it dies. Football has evolved. Why not baseball? I don't think this is evolving.
Football has evolved. Baseball has evolved as well. But you're talking about like changing the true structure of the game, not a new rule emphasis or trying to speed up the game or now we're going to have different, the different kickoff is one thing. That's why I really was anti new kickoff rule in the NFL, but they were about to get rid of it anyway. That's a fundamental change, not to the extreme. Like, as I said, I'm trying to find the equivalent in football to this golden at bat rule in baseball.
There is none currently.
There is none currently, but it would be, the fifth down. Someone said it'd be like adding an extra player for one play on the field for the offense. It would be, it would be something. You get more points for you get to call your shot on this play. If you get a touchdown on it, it's worth 12 points. Like, just something ridiculous.
So the same person texted in, this is already a rule during banana ball for the Savannah Bananas. You already answered your question. This rule would be implemented that's used. It's like the Harlem Globetrotters being able to do whatever the Harlem Globetrotters are doing now. That is basically breaking the rules, but putting that in the NBA and having it be a thing. It's a mockery of the sport and what it actually is in terms of a competitive nature, not just entertainment.
All right, coming up next, we'll get back to this, I'm sure, a little bit later on in the show. But up next, I want to talk about an interesting number that was thrown out from one of our Chiefs contributors, Josh Briscoe, about the wide receivers. And what does it actually tell us? Plus, we'll wrap things up with the local colleges and what is going on in the college football playoff next. Back here on Cody and Gold, just getting started on a Tuesday. You guys can continue to hit us up on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. I think we'll connect with Vinny next week. We'll let him get back from vacation, and then we'll have our VNFL insider. He had some amazing tweets during the Jets game on Sunday. If you're watching that game, you know why. That's because the Jets were up fairly comfortably for a little while against the Seahawks, and then, like it typically does for the Jets, things very quickly fell apart for them. So we'll connect with Vinny either later on this week or next week for our regular appearance. During the break, though, the Royals did announce a little bit of news. I know some of you had been keeping an eye on where you could watch the Royals games. Of course, you can listen to them right here on your home for the Royals, 96.5 The Fan. But also like where you could watch it, knowing that the Diamond Sports Group had the bankruptcy hearings and where things were going to go. And a lot of teams had already announced deals with what is now going to be the FanDuel Sports Network, and hey, where can you watch? And so much conversation over the last couple of years have been about being able to watch the games and the Bally app, and a lot of people annoyed with it, and it wasn't the most reliable app and things like that. The Royals did just announce during the break that they have agreed once again with Diamond Sports Group, owner of FanDuel Sports Network, for this upcoming season. The games will continue to be produced and distributed by FanDuel Sports Network. So it's the same setup, just rebranded from Bally Sports. The one addition to this, as we discussed a couple weeks ago, is that this year you will also be able to watch the Royals through Amazon Prime Video. Now, it will be an add-on subscription. There's no announcement on specific cost for that at this point in time, so I have no idea what that's going to look like, but it is going to be an add-on. They don't have a pricing structure out yet, but it'll be on the four major cable networks, Comcast, DirecTV, etc. And then the app itself, the standalone app, will probably be very similar cost-wise to the Bally app. I think you can already see the branding has changed to the FanDuel Sports Network app, and there's maybe a chance that the Amazon add-on is a different price. Maybe it's cheaper, but that's a big if at this point. But that's the latest from the Royals. If you're wondering where things were going to go and how to watch games, you should just listen to them on 96.5 The Fan anyway. But if you're wanting to watch them as well, FanDuel Sports Network is going to have the games. And it'll be very similar with the caveat that now you're going to be able to also have the ability, if you already have the Amazon app, to just have the add-on through there. And let's be real, I know the Amazon app, Drew, is stable. Like that was a big issue that I had early on in the season with the Bally app, is the stability of it. We've seen NFL games on Thursday Night Football for years now. We've had plenty of other things on the Amazon app. I've really never had any issues with the Amazon app. So that's the part that I think is the best. Other than that, nothing else is really changing.
The worst thing that you can have is an app that's malfunctioning constantly, which whether it be here in Kansas City, friends who watch the Pacers on Bally back at home, always Bally crashing. There's always a problem and everything like that. So I like this, the convenience of being able to have it on two places, I guess, technically now. Or how much was the Bally app, by the way?
It was, what, $19.99 a month or something like that?
I mean, you would hope that it would be, like, as an add-on, it wouldn't be as much, but because you're already paying for the Prime subscription, so you would hope that maybe it's a little bit cheaper, which in turn might allow people to save a little bit of money in their pockets.
So that's the latest. We'll let you know if there's anything new on pricing and stuff that comes out, but the Royals announcing that during the break. All right, I want to get back to the Chiefs, though, because our Chiefs contributor, Josh Briscoe, who joins this show on Fridays, I know he filled in a little bit last week for me as well. I appreciate that. He'll join us on Friday's show at his normal time at 11. He does great work over at Chiefs on SI. He had some numbers that I thought were kind of interesting in terms of how we view Xavier Worthy's rookie season. And in comparison, like a lot of people have done, to Rashee Rice from a year ago. Last year, let's remember, it took multiple weeks until Rashee Rice really became the guy. It wasn't an instant thing. It wasn't really until November of last season. You know, his best game prior to November of last season was against the Broncos when he had four catches for 72 yards. But it was from November 26th on, he had 100-yard performance, 60, 72, 91, 57, 127. And then we know in the postseason, he had a 100-plus-yard game against the Dolphins and came up big with eight catches in the AFC title game. So we know the story of what Rice was last year, and we all know this year, unfortunately, the season was cut short. And so how people view Xavier Worthy to Rice, I think, is interesting this year. The number that was out there from Josh Briscoe was just in relation to the snap percentage compared to where things were a year ago for Rashee Rice. So, for example on this, Xavier Worthy, in the game alone, just in the game against the Raiders, he had 42 snaps. Justin Watson had 32. And as Briscoe's tweet says, why does that matter? 10 more snaps than Watson. Well, Worthy has now had 526 snaps in 2024. That is the most snaps of any Chiefs receiver this year. He just passed Justin Watson, who had 516. And this, of course, is due to the injuries that have occurred to either Rashee Rice and Hollywood Brown, and D-Hop has only been on the team since the middle of the season. So that part is not surprising. It's just, I think, a little bit of a different way to look at what we're seeing from Worthy. On one hand, I think you can see the large number of snaps and say, okay, he's getting more opportunity than maybe even Rashee Rice did a year ago, but the production is not the same. Different type of receiver. Let's also remember at this point in time overall where the offense is compared to a season ago. Worthy statistically, 33 catches, 407 yards, and four touchdowns. We all know he got off to a great start against Baltimore, had what the three touches and two touchdowns immediately. But since then, against the Raiders, five catches, 54, four for 46, four for 61. And then he had a couple games in a row where he unfortunately only had one catch for 11 yards between the Bucs game, where he had two targets, and the Denver game where he had the one. We know they've missed on a couple of passes down the field. A year ago, Rashee Rice, not just the production, but the snap share. Rashee Rice, if you take a look rookie-wise, in all-time numbers, Worthy at 63% of the snaps this year. Rashee Rice last year only had 55% of the snaps. So Xavier Worthy is getting more snaps in his rookie year than Rashee Rice did, which I'm bringing this up because I think we have to remember that it wasn't until basically a week ago last year that Rice really took off. I'm not saying on Sunday against the Chargers that Xavier Worthy is going to start having five catches for 100 yards every week or anything like that, but I would caution for those that are maybe disappointed with what Worthy has provided in his rookie campaign. It wasn't until right around now, a year ago, where Rice just completely took off. And they're also asking Xavier Worthy to be more of the guy this year until prior to DeAndre Hopkins' arrival.
I was going to say the way that they're, it's interesting with the whole comparison because their stories are a little bit different, but they're also kind of the same where, like, Rashee obviously last year he had to step up. He had no other choice to step up, and he was able to. Where the percentage of snaps, Xavier Worthy's getting more, and he hasn't been asked to be the guy, but he's asked to play a little bit more, and he's been able to continue to do that. So, in looking at the track of the two as rookies, it's similar in the fact that they're being asked to do things, but Rashee was asked to do a whole lot more and is still getting less percentage of the snaps, at least to this point, than Xavier Worthy. I guess, is that 55 for Rashee? That was to this point of last year, right? Or is that all
that
of last year?
That was all of last year, okay, as a rookie. That's what I'm saying is, yeah, what's surprising. Like, that's not to this point. The production for Rice didn't take off really till like end of November of 2023. And we know how vital he was, but he still only got 55% of the snaps. That's because they were still giving snaps to Kadarius Toney for a while. They were still giving snaps to MVS, obviously, for much of the season. You know, that was a huge part of the equation. Whereas this year, you've had your top two receivers out in Brown and Rice. And so Worthy, prior to DeAndre Hopkins, was basically being asked, along with Juju, to be the number one receiver for this team. So that's why the snaps are up. They were asking much earlier on in the season for Xavier Worthy to be a factor. And they're just different types of receivers. The deep pass connections, if they would have connected on two more, all of a sudden the stat line for Xavier Worthy looks so different. Like, he's at 33 catches for 407 and four touchdowns. That could so easily, and some of this is his fault because he has not had the best awareness on the football field, right? And then some of it has been, as we've discussed, some of the throws have been off for Patrick Mahomes. But you could easily have seen Xavier Worthy having 550 and six touchdowns right now. Maybe, yeah. You know what I mean? And pacing for a 700-plus yard rookie season. Instead, unless he really turns it on, he might end up as a 600-yard or 550-yard receiver. I know before the season started, before we knew about the injuries, of course, the over-unders for Worthy, wasn't it like 550 and a half?
His over-unders were ridiculous. We
thought they were crazy. We thought he was going to have 550.
His over-unders were 750.
Yeah, we were like, what is going on with the number?
We all thought 550 would have been good, yeah. Or 600.
And then the injuries happened. We're like, well, maybe he's going to end up going over that. And I guess he still could. He's got to really turn it on here, and they got to connect on the deep passes for that to happen. But it looks like 550 is probably more realistic, unless he goes out on Sunday and he gets 80 yards, and then we're having a different conversation.
I don't even want to call it like a blessing in disguise, but sometimes like you're put in certain situations where you have no choice but to go with the young guys. And this is case in point to, again, what Brett Veach does, where I know that Xavier Worthy was a first-round pick. He's always going to be a first-round pick. But for him to fit in the offense as well as he does, along the lines of Rashee Rice, like, he was put in a position where Xavier Worthy's had to grow up a little bit, where even though he has had those mistakes, or Mahomes has overthrown him, they haven't had that connection on the deep ball for whatever reason, he's gotten better and better and better, particularly over the last like 3 weeks now, where he's a reliable weapon and he's able to create more. Andy's been propping him up a lot in terms of not even necessarily like statistically what he's done, but he's starting to get it now, which can be a dangerous thing because Rashee Rice obviously got it at a certain point and he was able to take over. Xavier Worthy's getting it now, and with him also being able to learn from DeAndre Hopkins, having him in the room, it only is going to help in terms of the long-term trajectory, of course, of what the Chiefs have next year in particular and then going forward.
I don't know what it'll look like next year for him as he continues to get more comfortable. I think right now it looks like if we're just looking at stats, for it to be, you know, good enough for people watching out there, if they're not connecting on the deep passes right now, you're not going to see the numbers. Now, throughout his career, I'm not saying he can't develop into more of an all-around route runner and all that, but right now, his production is largely based on, are they going to connect on a deep pass? Another one, you know, third and two, even though I wouldn't have passed the ball on third and two, I just would have ran it, but the play-action pass on third and two against the Raiders on Black Friday, and they connect on that. All of a sudden, that's another, 50 yards, and it's a touchdown, and or he's got five touchdowns, and he's got over 460 yards receiving on the year. Like, where there's a bunch of them they haven't connected on. It adds up. But you can see how the numbers could look drastically different if, you know, he has one foot in bounds instead, and he was aware of where the sideline is, and Mahomes and him have better timing. Like, there's so many
three
things
that... passes could literally be 150 yards.
Yeah, that definitely next year, but you would like to think the next month and a half that it's still something over the next five games that they can actually correct. But I thought the snap percentages were interesting based off of the production, but also what they have been asking him to do. And just remembering, we have this, I think, thought from the outside sometimes that Rashee Rice, just the entire season, was dominant last year. It really was until the end of November, mid-November, end of November, where all of a sudden he became a huge difference maker and a must target for the Chiefs offense, and a big reason why they went on to win a Super Bowl a year ago.
Yeah, it was like the halfway point of the season when it was like, okay, we need you to start really, because we were practically begging Andy to play Rashee Rice more, like, throw the ball to Rashee Rice because he's the best wide receiver and it's clear and it's very obvious. And that was like week 8 or 9. And then they started doing it to your point in November, and obviously it just took off from there. And we saw how good he was as well before he got injured. I mean, he was outstanding. He was so good. He was, because the big question was coming in was, you know, is Rashee a number one wide receiver? I think he absolutely showed that he is a number one wide receiver capability right there.
Absolutely. Now, thinking of just where wide receiver, there was an update actually from Ian Rappaport yesterday or 2 days ago that Hollywood Brown has an appointment with his surgeon scheduled for week 15. So we're already now heading into week 14, right? So a week away. And that's when he is expected, could receive full clearance, which would obviously put him in line for week 16, week 17. That's why everybody keeps mentioning Christmas. The Steelers game, there could be a scenario where finally for the Steelers game, now who knows what his snaps look like and his role and everything like that, but you could have Hollywood Brown with Xavier Worthy on the football field, you know, with DeAndre Hopkins for the first time ever.
It makes their offense potentially a whole lot more dangerous than, and we haven't even seen it. Like, we haven't even gotten a glimpse of it because he was hurt on the first preseason play. We wouldn't even know what it looks like.
Yeah, one pass in Jacksonville, fluky injury, then a weird setback that has obviously resulted in him. I mean, he would, if he didn't have the setback, he was going to be back in week five or whatever, week four. And then for Hollywood Brown, that is. All right, we'll, of course, talk some more Chiefs football coming up in the next hour, including during the Chiefs Red Half Hour at 11:30 here on Cody and Gold. But I want to talk college football briefly for a little bit, because all three local schools, it's fair to say, all in different ways had disappointing seasons, some different degrees than others. But the goal for all three was the college football playoff, the expanded field. We legitimately thought, and I think most did, no matter which fan base you were part of, that your team had a path, had a case before the season. Like, you could realistically see them all getting in the college football playoff. And of course, the reality is none of them are heading to the college football playoff.
Crazy.
As I said, different degrees, right? MU still ends up with a 9-win season. Brady Cook's injury was a huge part of why they ultimately did not get to 10 wins. And if they got to 10 wins, they'd be in the conversation. I know there's some MU fans that believe if they would have beat South Carolina, they'd be in the college football playoff. I think they'd be in the conversation.
They'd be like in the first four out bubble conversation, yeah, with Clemson. Like,
they'd be right there on the fringe, needing a lot of help heading into conference title game weekend. But they were the closest to getting in still. K-State, it looked for a while like they had a great path to get to a Big 12 title game. They, of course, did not. They end up with an 8-win regular season in a bowl game. And then Kansas, we all know how the season went for them. Disastrous start. Then they went on a run beating ranked team after ranked team and then laid a complete egg in Baylor. And they will not go to a bowl game. They don't finish the season with 6 wins. They finish it with 5 wins. So in different degrees, as I said, but disappointing across the board for each one of the three locals.
Yeah, it's interesting because all of the seasons are disappointing. And I talked about this on the last 249 Miles of College Football podcast.
There
if you
go.
Haven't already, go check it out. Go subscribe. New episode coming out tomorrow. Disappointing seasons don't mean they're bad seasons. For Kansas, I think this is a bad, you could say it's a bad season.
No, it's a bad season, absolutely.
If they would have made a bowl game and they would have won the bowl game, it's not a bad season. It's disappointing. But I think in fairness, they didn't make a bowl game. It's a bad season.
Yeah.
Kansas State, I think it's turned into a bad season, actually, more even so, including this past weekend, because now they're 8-4. This is a team that three weeks ago, still had a shot of, okay, they have a case of making it in, and they haven't been able, the wheels kind of just fell off for Kansas State. But I don't know, if you look at the way the season's ended, has not been good, but it's not a bad season, I don't think, for Kansas State. It's disappointing. It's not good, but I don't think it's bad. A bad season would have been not making a bowl game or going 7-5, I think. Missouri, they could still go 10-3. Disappointing they didn't make the college football playoff, obviously. Disappointing, unlucky a little bit with the injuries. Maybe they have a better chance against Alabama, certainly, if Drew Pine or if Brady Cook is playing instead of Drew Pine. But say they win the bowl game and they go 10-3. It's not a bad season for Missouri. The last time they went back-to-back double-digit win seasons was 13-14. And that was technically, they haven't gone 10 years with having back-to-back 10-win season. So I think for them to do it, it's disappointing where they didn't make the playoff. But I don't think you can sit back and say it's a bad season for Missouri if they have 10 wins. I don't think you can do it. I understand why you might just categorize it as bad because they missed the playoff and it's disappointing. But I think there is a difference there with disappointing and it actually being a bad season.
Yeah, I hear you. I would say everything was set up for Missouri this year to get in.
The field expanded. Yes.
They had
the easiest
SEC schedule you can have in terms of the way the schedule is rotating around or whatever. This year was setting up perfectly. You had an established veteran quarterback. You had maybe the best receiver in the country, although it ended up not being the production this year. But I think he'll still be
first. They didn't feed him at all.
Luther Burden, who of course declared for the draft yesterday.
Enough.
He's going to be, I think, a top 10 pick. I know everybody's got their mock drafts out there. Some people have him much lower. I think he'll end up being a top 10 pick by the time the combine's done.
Matt Miller had him as 6 overall on his board, I think.
Mel Kiper had him like 19th or something. It's way too early for mock drafts, but I saw that floating around on social media. So Luther Burden, you had that kind of talent on your team, and everything was shaping up to have a really, really special season, and they just didn't. I know you're excited tonight. The college football playoff rankings are coming out and everything like that, right? It's a Tuesday night.
I'm intrigued.
So that'll come out, and we'll see for conference title game weekend. The only thing to follow up on the Ohio State-Michigan convo from yesterday, not the flag planting stuff that we discussed, but the only downside with the expansion of the playoff, otherwise I love it, was that that Ohio State-Michigan game, a year ago, that's an elimination game. Ohio State's done. They're done.
Out of the playoff.
They're out of the playoff. They're done. In the expanded playoff, really not a whole lot of harm done. Maybe it impacts if they're hosting a game or whatever, but like they're playing the Big Ten title game still, right?
No.
Or not, because they're not playing the Big Ten title game, they get a bye.
They're basically
already
locked into the playoff by not playing by the not Big playing. Ten title Sorry, game, actually. They're actually helped correct. Out by not being there.
So they're in the playoff no matter what. Versus in yes. a year ago, if they would have lost, they'd be out. So that game meant less. That was the concern with expanding. Now, on the flip side, I can tell you there's a conference title game in like the Mountain West where Boise State, UNLV, the winner of that is getting in.
Yeah.
It's a win and you're in type of conference title game. So that time the conference title game actually means more. Mm-hmm. Maybe for the group of fives, the conference title games are actually going to mean something. But for power fives, the conference title games don't mean a whole lot.
So I think that
that's the downside.
I think it's almost like a case. You almost have to go case by case basis, which is unfortunate because to your point, Gold, if you really want to get nerdy with it, the path does change effectively for Ohio State, and it could factor in who they play. Like if they could host a game, they might have to go on the road, and then depending on where their seating is, they might have to their path might be tougher. That's like diving deep into the weeds and stuff like that. For your point about the conference title game, what I think is really interesting about like tonight will be interesting, but next weekend when they do the final rankings,
well, that's the only one that matters. Yeah,
if Penn State's playing Oregon in the Big Ten title game, Penn State has just the one loss. But Ohio State, we know, has beat Penn State. If Penn State loses to Oregon...
Okay, very likely.
Say they lose by 10 points to Oregon. Is Penn State out? Two losses. Their two losses are to Oregon and Ohio State. Ohio State in that game, this is where the eye test, I think, is a bigger deal. Ohio State could have won that game by at least 14 points, but they messed around and the game was close late. If Oregon wins by 14 points, is Penn State out?
But Oregon's the number one team in the country, so are they going to dock you for losing to the number one team in the country? Who do you think gets in and over them?
Well, because so this is my point. If Penn State loses, they cannot be ranked above Ohio State. Because Ohio State beat them. Ohio State is not playing in a game this weekend. So if Ohio State's ranked 9, that means you're going to put Penn State at 10 or 11. All of a sudden, Penn State now is in the argument or in the conversation with South Carolina. They're in the conversation with Clemson. They're in the conversation with Miami because Miami's not in the ACC title game. They're in the conversation with Alabama and Ole Miss. Penn State doesn't have a good resume. Their best win is Illinois, I think. They haven't beaten anybody. So when you look at that's where Lane Kiffin had said, ironically, you might actually not want to be in your conference title game because it could actually hurt you more than help you. So I'm excited for this weekend because tomorrow I think it'll be interesting to see how things shake out. But Ohio State, to your point, almost saved by not being in the Big Ten title game, in a way they've locked themselves in even amidst the loss to Michigan. But you're right in the fact that that's a game that's supposed to mean so much for the season, and it doesn't anymore in regards to the elimination from the playoff, because in a 14 playoff they'd be out. Alabama would be out. Georgia would be out.
Like anytime there's Clemson any controversy with the college football playoff and everything, and we're deciding between teams, I will just always lean on the side that they're going to pick an SEC team over anybody. That's kind of where I'm at. So if you're going to debate an SEC team over a Big Ten team or a Big Ten team over a ACC team, I'm going to side with they're going to pick the SEC team.
Isn't it ironic that we expanded the playoff and we thought, okay, more teams are going to be included? What actually has happened this year, Gold, is because of the expanded playoff, Georgia's going to make it. Alabama's going to make it.
Yep.
Potentially. But Georgia's going to make it. Clemson could make it.
Yeah,
Ohio State's going to make it. Where we expand the platform. We're like, oh, we get Boise State. We get Indiana. Mm-hmm. We get, I don't know, throw out whoever else you want. Tennessee in there. Mm-hmm. Amidst other teams. You're also tending, like, it wouldn't
well,
be that way
the,
if there were only
the,
four.
That's which, the thing. The expanded
it's
playoff.
Just ironic.
The expanded playoff, and it's going to get worse because the SEC and Big Ten are already trying to guarantee themselves. That's the next conversation is the SEC and Big Ten are trying to, in the future, guarantee themselves the ability to have locked in spots for their conferences. But that's already basically happening. Of course, by expanding the field, they were never going to give the Big 12 extra spots. Not that they deserve any this year. They weren't going to give the group of five extra spots. They're going to give them a spot. And that's what we're seeing. Yeah, of course, it was always good. It was going to provide more money for the big conferences in the SEC and the Big Ten, and that's what's playing out.
From the 816, if you consider yourself a good team, a playoff-worthy team, you should go undefeated in the Big 12 because that conference is garbage. The Big 12 has been the second-best conference in college football this year, if you've been watching.
They just beat up on each other, though, man.
Yeah, it would be, the SEC
cannibalized themselves.
The SEC did the same thing.
Coming up next, though, I want to talk back in the NFL, a conversation that's going to get really interesting in the final couple weeks around MVPs, and a hilarious tweet that reminds us that some people just love to change history a little bit. I'll explain that next.